Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 534. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. How does it feel for me to be talking to another human? Great. Thank you. How you doing, Chris?
Oh. I'm sure it does, but Kevin, let me say this. You did an excellent job with your one-man show the other night reviewing your trip to Akron, Ohio for AIW. If anyone out there has not listened to Kevin Solo's show with his Saturday adventure, please go back into our archives and check that out.
And I do believe that eventually that show will be on, I'm trying to think of, because Fight.tv is where they have the iPay-per-views.
Smart Mark Video,
yeah, I believe you can get an online version of that. I'm not quite sure how long that takes for them to come out with. You more than likely will not see me. Well, there is a possibility that I'm on during the Josh Bishop versus Nick Gage match, because the fight did spill out to the floor right near the bleachers that we were standing on. So there is an outside possibility that yours truly and the esteemed wife are on Smart Mark Video sometime in the, if not now, then in the near future. Those shows, I was still a little shocked that Jeremy enjoyed it. Like, I figured just because he's Jeremy that he was kind of going to shit on that. But I was pleasantly surprised he enjoyed it, and I enjoy it. Like, it really did. I don't think it's something that I mentioned on there. I do feel like they're maybe a step above some of the other indies that I've seen very locally in Columbus here. I would say that the overall match quality is a little bit higher. I mean, it's still an indie match. Don't get me wrong on that count. But especially kind of, you know, more of an early developmental stage. It was a good show as usual. And I will wander my way up there to Cleveland at some juncture. But I'm not completely sure when that will be next. We'll figure out. I may go solo, or hey, it might be one of the iPay-per-view shows, and Chris can join me, which would be awfully nice. For now, there was an iPay-per-view on the WWE Network that took place. Was it Crown Jewel? Was that actually the name of it?
Yeah, Crown Jewel was last Thursday, Halloween, in the middle of the afternoon here in the good old US of A.
I will 100% admit that I have not watched Crown Jewel in the least bit. And I am, as we record this, finally finishing up AEW Dynamite. So I haven't even gotten to how things played out because of this nice little trip to Saudi Arabia. Now, this is something that I know that I've kind of heard about in the vague, but I have not heard the details. What is exactly Plain Gate? Like, I definitely know that the WWE wrestlers were stranded in Saudi Arabia a little bit longer than they wanted to be. But what other details are there to be had?
Well, they were stranded for, the majority of the crew was stranded for over 24 hours. But on what officially is being called a medical issue. Early in the morning Friday, a small plane was able to be to arrive and sought to be used only for essential personnel for SmackDown that night, in hopes that that plane would arrive in time. It did not. But about 20 people were allowed to leave. Vince McMahon left first, along with several executives. Brock Lesnar got out early. Hogan and Flair got out early. Tyson Fury got out early. Cain Velasquez was with the regular crew that was stuck for the 24 whole hours. Lots of rumors floating around that the WWE crew was not kept for so long due to mechanical issues, but because the Saudi government was playing some games with one Vince McMahon, who apparently they are behind on paying him for these Saudi Arabia shows, and had been for some time. The belief is that Vince decided to cut the feed to the live feed that was actually going to air throughout Saudi Arabia for 40 minutes until all issues were resolved.
Uh-huh.
A $60 million payment was what was put into WWE's bank accounts essentially that day, or it's believed to be not that long before. And it's said that Vince and the Crown Prince may have gotten into an argument that left the WWE plane to be in a, to put it delicately, fucked with.
Yeah, to have mechanical issues.
yes, mechanical issues. Everyone was removed from the plane. They were sent back to their hotel rooms, which weren't bad hotel rooms, and they were allowed to eat room service and what have you. But it did feel like apparently a lot of wrestlers not happy about this situation. Felt like hostages in a foreign land, and felt that one Mr. McMahon abandoned them in said foreign country.
Well, yeah, I guess that's one to me that if you don't think there's that kind of a situation that's going to come up, a lot of things, the first thing that's coming to my head is the Titanic, where the rich people got off first and the other people were left to fend for themselves.
There is very much that, so yes.
Obviously, that's a much worse fate, dying than being stuck in Saudi Arabia for 24 hours.
Yeah, I mean, everyone is home, they're fine now, but yeah. Prevailing belief is that a lot of people are swearing to never go back, and I don't blame them at all. But as I said, everyone is home, and the next time they're not going to have to be able to, this is going to come up at all. It's probably going to be in around June, so there's a lot of time for people to calm down from this, or to stick to their guns with that.
I guess leading to a
situation where if you were already unhappy with in WWE, well, this didn't help.
Yeah, I mean, there are still plenty of people that will be happy to go back, I am sure. Well, that's pretty wild. I guess I had heard kind of bits and pieces of some of that other stuff, but I hadn't really read the whole story on it, honestly. And yeah, I mean, they did get to miss a day of work.
That's still a very, very interesting situation, because the show that ended up happening on SmackDown was probably a lot better than the show that was going to be anyway. A jet-lagged, tired, miserable crew of wrestlers just half-assing their way through half-ass matches we've seen before. The main event was supposed to be Roman Reigns versus Baron Corbin, for God's sakes.
Yeah, that was the one thing I did think to myself before, like, even any of these stories came out. I was just sitting there thinking to myself, I'm like, God damn, man, that is just gotta be tiring, because isn't that like an 18-hour flight just to get over there?
Well, I think it's like 13 straight if you don't have to make a stop for refueling. something of that nature. Of course, it can be a lot longer due to a number of issues related to traveling for that long. And but yeah, no,
I guess even at 13 hours, that's pretty rough.
That is very rough. And then,
along with changing how many time zones in that 13 hours.
Yeah, it was insane that they thought that they were just going to be able to do a normal episode of SmackDown with the same crew. I have no idea why the plan all along wasn't to do, say, an all-women's episode or something of the like, just to not, you know, risk that at all, and to give the and to give those poor crew a rest.
Right.
Oh, that's what. Instead, we ended up with the night one of the NXT invasion, which worked out because all of the NXT crew lives in Orlando, so it's just one flight to get everyone there in a matter of hours. And, you know, there were risks associated with that, too. Apparently that plane may not have gotten to Buffalo all that long before SmackDown went on the air. So,
that is still logistically kind of tough to, at the last minute, find a plane that will take you from Orlando to Buffalo in, you know, what, at least 20 people or so?
Yeah, it would have to be. I mean, they flew, I don't know, 10 to 12 wrestlers.
Okay.
Plus, I believe Shawn Michaels lives down there as well now, and he was with the crew and Triple H during the invasion story, the invasion angle. So, yeah, well, probably about, I mean, maybe at least 13 people, maybe. And who else they brought with them? I don't remember during the closing segment where they were all in the ring at the same time. I did not count everyone.
Right.
But yeah. No. But and then, what transpired was one of the best WWE TV episodes of the year. It felt different. It was the right way to it almost would feel like they didn't miss a beat and this was planned all along. But by how well everything turned out, from Shayna Baszler being the first person to jump in and attack Bayley, to, you know, having Tommaso Ciampa interrupt the Miz TV segment and end up in a match with the Miz where he won all the way through to the end with Adam Cole beating Daniel Bryan clean in the middle of the ring in one of the best WWE TV matches of the year. So, yeah, it was, I mean, thank God for Daniel Bryan and his morals and ethics. Because with him, they had a top guy who they could put in a very long match to fill time.
I am just starting to watch SmackDown, and I'm amused that they showed it seemed like the entirety of the Brock Lesnar and Cain Velasquez match.
Pretty much. Yes, so it was only about 3 minutes.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know if they quite showed the whole thing, but they definitely showed a majority of it. So, yeah, I can already tell that they're off to a we're going to waste some time. Oh, dear Lord, they're going back to more video clips? I'm glad this gets better. But, yeah, it is kind of funny what happens it always seems like the WWE makes their best product sometimes when they're put in these really weird positions like this.
There's definitely some history to that, yes. When they're backed against the wall, they're able to actually do think outside the box and do different things, and it works out for them. So, yeah, no. I mean, the NXT invasion of SmackDown was a home run. I would argue the NXT invasion of Raw, maybe not so much. It was definitely an example of doing something a second time being not as good as the first.
Well, that would definitely be part of it. The other part is that, I feel like all the announcers, well, maybe two of the announcers, since poor Dio Madden got put F5 through a table fairly shortly into Raw this week. They did a good job of mentioning that there were not enough regular SmackDown superstars around, so the NXT people could do a little bit more against their roster, which, you know, it does kind of track, is a pretty logical thing to point out. And although it's still, it will never not kill me when you have the likes of Zack Ryder and I'm trying to think of some of the other Raw people coming out to help, you know.
That was bad. That is one of the main things I did not like. It made it, you know, on SmackDown it was a full scale takeover invasion. NXT kicked everyone's ass of, you know, who was there, and came off strong. This was them being treated like a heel faction that was being run off after attacking someone from behind.
I guess I agree with the assessment, but I don't know how you do it differently without, especially when they're kind of doing these ambush style attacks. They weren't putting them in matches to be proven strong. I wrote it pretty early, I feel like, in the Almost Live, definitely half-assed review of WWE Raw, that I knew that there was not a chance in hell that Seth Rollins was suffering the same fate that Daniel Bryan did.
No, so we'll get to Seth then. There's certainly a lot to talk about with that guy. I mean, good. I mean, what? Not as good as on SmackDown, but still, you know, nothing that really hurt the angle. I think that sometimes this month gets weird because the build of Survivor Series. You know, everyone puts aside not everyone, not this time, but typically people everyone puts aside their own ambitions and their own animosity to join together for team unity, for brand unity. And it just feels just so put upon that this one month of the year is the only time anyone actually cares about such things. But at least with the NXT crew, you understand the motivation. And as long as you keep certain people from teaming, from directly working with working together, you can, you know, you can make it work that, you know, okay, technically, Tommaso Ciampa and the Undisputed Era are on the same side, but as long as they're not actually working together on camera, it doesn't hurt their feud in NXT.
Oh, agreed. Yeah, it's there is a balance that you can find with the invasion angle.
Yeah, there is, and once again, it's most believable that NXT feels that they have a lot to prove against Raw and SmackDown, and they need to be aggressive, and they need to, you know, declare this war. Yeah, heading into Survivor Series, I like what they did with Becky and Shayna. I thought that was very, very effective. Although it kind of dismissed Bayley, although maybe that's the idea that Becky and Shayna are going to be focused on each other, and Bayley is, you know, able to, you know, manipulate that to her advantage. We'll see about that.
Right.
But I mean, I like that. I like it. That triple threat, I really like that they announced with the women's all the women's champions. I also like the triple threat with the tag team champions. Actually, that with Viking Raiders, Undisputed Era, O'Reilly and Fish, and the Revival, saying, you know, as long as all three of those teams, you know, stays champions, that match could steal the show.
Yeah, there's, I guess I do, like, as much as I've harped on the brand loyalty thing for 1 month, I think pulling NXT into this mix definitely gives it a different vibe for this year. Like, I don't know if it's something that can last, but because they're, like, freshly on TV and everyone has referred to it as a call-up up to this juncture in time, you know, I'm sure that those words will not be used as much in the future since they are on TV. But, it gives Survivor Series a nice feel that it hasn't had, as you pointed out. Like, I haven't and still wouldn't really buy into Raw versus SmackDown itself. But having NXT pulling what they're doing, like, it's such a happy accident for the WWE to have all those wrestlers get stuck overseas.
Yeah,
to be able to pull this whole thing off, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, they were gonna eventually have to do something like this to introduce the NXT roster into the more watched shows of Raw and SmackDown. I don't know if it was going to be this early.
No.
But yeah, obviously it's now happening. It's happened. And no, it definitely feels, Survivor Series definitely feels like a big deal. It feels like it's, you know, different. That has been the strength of Survivor Series, you know, story, narrative, you know, and motivation. Issues aside, last couple of years, Survivor Series has been a very good show. I would say, for the most part, because you get some unique matches that you don't normally see, and it can be a break from the from seeing some of the same matches over and over again. So no, it's definitely good in that sense. And as you said, bringing NXT in has been a real shot in the arm to the concept. I do find it amusing that while they're going to do the champion versus champion triple threat idea in two of them, and for, you know, two matches announced, and I imagine they may very well do it for all three brand secondary championships, IC champion versus US champion versus North American champion.
Oh, yeah.
They are not going there with the men's heavyweight championships. boy would that be an awkward triple threat match. Brock Lesnar versus The Fiend versus Adam Cole. I'm fine with it. I'm also fine with breaking up the monotony of the whole, if there's going to be a monotony of the whole, you know, brands, battle for brand supremacy concept with, you know, championship matches from, you know, from the three brands within each brand, just to, you know, I guess one of those things that has arguably kept Survivor Series from feeling like it has any great stakes to it is no titles are on the line at Survivor Series, at least the last couple of years. The way they've done the format, so
yeah,
you know, having heavyweight title matches on the show definitely, I think, could also help that as well. If you don't really buy into the concept of brand supremacy, at least there's some matches that have tangible stakes to them.
Yeah, that would help spice up something that's been missing from Survivor Series.
Yeah, because, I mean, I've generally liked a lot of Survivor Series, but yes, if you are totally just unmoved by the Battle for Brand Supremacy concept, then, you know, while some of the matches are unique and at times, you know, even very good to excellent, it still misses something. Plus,
yeah, and it does, at least this year, like, if they had more time on their brands, it would be one thing, too, because we're a month out from the draft.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's definitely part of a problem, yes.
So, that's kind of a big problem this year, on top of the fact that they also did the whole wild card angle for what, post WrestleMania?
Yeah, it lasted damn near 6 months. So they ran through a lot of matches to get through spring and summer that, you know, could have, you know, been felt more special if they'd waited till Survivor Series season. But that's why they've done what they've done with NXT and had, or you know, through a series of happy accidents, been able to do what they've done with NXT and have NXT come right in, declare war, give Raw and SmackDown wrestlers their own motivation to fight back and to be, you know, focused on NXT, but maybe not, and maybe, you know, looking past each other. But then all these matches are going to happen with all three brands represented. So yeah, it's very good. Plus, going back to the heavyweight championship situation, Brock Lesnar versus The Fiend versus Adam Cole. Which one of these is not like the others? That would not have been good for Adam Cole, and Brock Lesnar and Bray Wyatt should definitely not be anywhere near each other at this stage of where they're at with Bray Wyatt.
No. Hopefully, maybe the WWE has learned their lesson from what they just did with Seth Rollins and put him in just a terrible, terrible spot with The Fiend, which also ended up putting the WWE in a weird, weird position of having to explain away why Brock Lesnar is now a member of Raw.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it felt kind of weird. It felt like, you know, Fox really wanted Brock on the show. Haven't heard anything about if they're not happy about what's happened or not. But, you know, Brock is now on Raw with the WWE Championship. And The Fiend Bray Wyatt is now on SmackDown with the Universal Championship. Brock Lesnar, I mean, I think it amuses me that they brought in one of the toughest men in who ever walked the face of the planet, who has beaten Brock Lesnar before in a shoot, and had him go down in 3 minutes to build up to Brock Lesnar versus Rey Mysterio. That's I don't know if it amuses you, but it amuses me that they are running full on with a Brock Lesnar versus Rey Mysterio championship match at Survivor Series.
Yeah, that match is just like, you look at it from the one angle and you're like, oh, okay, we're getting Rey versus Brock again. I think. I'm assuming this has happened before.
Not since Brock's first run.
Oh, dear Lord. So, it's been quite some time. But, you know, if you just go off of name recognition, you can definitely go, oh, I got this. I understand what's going on here.
I mean, they did the big angle with Dominic. Actually, the two big angles with Dominic. So, I mean, Rey pretty much has to at least try to avenge his family.
Hey.
So it makes sense like that, and it didn't feel like Rey was bringing in his big brother to fight his battle for him. And
yeah, I mean, that was the biggest problem with Cain Velasquez, but they were selling an injury with Rey, weren't they?
Yeah, they're selling that he'd injured his shoulder, and he had his shoulder injured by Brock. Yes, in the angle with Dominic. So yeah, they at least gave him that cover that he wasn't just scared of Brock.
Yeah, which honestly, still, to me, like, anytime you're like, oh, I got this, you know, regardless of the shoot aspect of the angle, you're like, hey, I'm bringing in this guy that is twice my size to fight you since you're twice my size. Always seems like a very weenie thing to do when, as you correctly point out, he has some family honor to be defending.
You know what? It's become tradition for Brock to have his best match of the year against someone a lot smaller than him at Survivor Series. So it looks like that's going to continue. So that's fine. I mean, it's a good thing to do. It's, you know, it's another attraction for Survivor Series. I don't know if they're going to have Brock selling a knee injury for any length of time to give Rey any kind of an advantage or make the match, you know, anything goes or you know, just no. to try and, you know, get some time out of that match. But it's good, and it's a match. We, once again, it's better than doing Brock Lesnar versus Seth Rollins again.
Yeah, one last thing about Rey before we talk about the Seth Rollins part of things. The only thing that is weird to me about this whole setup is that we just got out of the Rey's gonna retire because he doesn't have the heart anymore, but now he's challenging for the Universal Championship, which is
WWE Championship.
Oh, WWE Championship.
Yeah. We were just coming out of the Rey can't beat Andrade story, and now...
Yeah,
we've blown past that to a Rey's getting a WWE Championship match. Well, I guess at this point, Cain Velasquez got a WWE Championship match and got a championship match in his first match. So, you know, yeah, Rey's a legend. He's avenging his son.
Anything goes.
Why not? You know, let's do this. It should probably be a good situation.
Yeah. Like I said, I guess I understand why they're kind of doing what they're doing. So, because, yeah, it's just, it is another guy. Like, I think, you know, even you and I had maybe kind of mentioned something of the sort that the list of people that can really take on Brock Lesnar is pretty limited. You know, they've kind of used most of the pool in the WWE. You could go, oh, because we were talking about him, honestly, about Brock and Roman Reigns being on the same brand again. And we're like, do we really want to see that again? And now we're stuck with, dear Lord, yeah, I understand why Seth Rollins is annoyed that he is yet again championship-less and Brock Lesnar is the champion.
Yeah, I mean, oh boy. Well, let's handle Seth from a character standpoint and then get into some of the more real-life stuff with him. But from a character standpoint, wow, have they done a number on him. He has had two matches with the Fiend Bray Wyatt where he literally threw everything, including the kitchen sink, at him. And in the second match, they did this ridiculous scene where he knocked Bray Wyatt off the stage, into some electrical work, sparks going everywhere, and the Fiend still got up, still put him in the mandible claw, still hit him with Sister Abigail, and pinned him in the Falls Count Anywhere match and won the Universal Championship. And, yeah, I mean, you could... I mean, everything Seth Rollins has been, yeah, that promo, you know, he cut on Monday and last night was, it was probably as real as any feeling as any promo Seth has ever cut in his life, because it's like running down this whole thing. It's like, wow, have they done a number on him?
Yeah, I mean, Seth Rollins is, I don't think, ever going to be the greatest promo. But, man, there are so many times where I do not think that they do him any favors. Like, him and a lot of other wrestlers. And, last night really did feel pretty authentic to the whole situation. You know, I can, like I said, I can definitely understand his frustration with being on a brand with, a Brock Lesnar champion again. Maybe it helps that, again, through some forced, self-inflicted errors, they've ended up with this conundrum again.
Yeah, and you know what? They can't go back that well. I mean, what's he going to do? Beat Brock a third time and have it not matter? He's just not that guy. People just don't see him there. Especially after the second time. Yeah, they've just done so much damage to him. As a babyface, he cannot challenge for the main championship until it's off of Brock and onto another babyface and then onto another heel. So I do see a heel turn, potentially for him down the line. It's almost going to be a necessity.
I almost felt like it was coming on Monday there, and then it didn't happen.
No, it didn't happen, but he did not completely turn down Triple H's offer of going to NXT. He kind of threw it back in his face as, well, let me show up as NXT champion. Of course, he ended up being part of the beatdown at the end, and Undisputed Era jumping in, and then everyone else from Raw, everyone else from NXT getting involved. But no, I mean, Seth is, I guess Seth is going to be a focal point of the Raw effort to fight back, with maybe some question of where his loyalty lies.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I did think to myself, when Triple H is like, you're either with me or against me, I'm like, I was like, yeah, I guess we were talking about kind of a rebrand because of what all's happened with Seth. And I was kind of thinking to myself, I'm like, that might be the only thing that does the trick, is to have a reset in NXT. But then it is kind of awkward that you bring Finn Balor back for the same type of thing, honestly.
I'm not sure exactly where everything's going to go and how the rest of the Survivor Series card is going to shake out. I'm sure that there will be traditional team elimination matches as part of Survivor Series. You know, Raw versus NXT, SmackDown versus NXT, Raw versus SmackDown. I hope they don't try to do like a triple threat 5-on-5-on-5 elimination match. That just sounds way too convoluted.
Well, that would be a really long match, I would imagine, too.
Yes, it would. Yes, it definitely would.
Either that or all of us would be bitching because the eliminations happened about a minute apart from every other elimination.
Yeah, that'd be the way to do that, and that's just stupid. As far as other stuff involving Seth, Seth Rollins has gotten himself in trouble of late with his Twitter fingers, and things he said in other different channels, but one thing he apparently did not say was he did not give a rah-rah speech to the Raw locker room, telling them to stop complaining about what happened in Saudi Arabia and get with the program and be part of the team. He is absolutely that was rumor that was going around. It was a story that Dave Meltzer and the Wrestling Observer were running with. That is apparently untrue. So Seth Rollins, not a complete corporate bootlicker.
Yeah, I would hope not, to be honest with you. As much as respect is the right word, but maybe understand his position as being one of the top guys and kind of letting things slide a little bit as far as, what happened in Saudi Arabia. He's got to know in his heart of hearts that they did not do him a whole lot of favors in both post-WrestleMania, both of the Brock Lesnar wins, aftermaths. Like, they booked him poorly. They've given him just trash scripts for the most part. Like, I would hope that even if you're happy with your position, that you would understand that maybe things could improve and that you wouldn't be that much, as you put it, a corporate bootlicker.
No. This is a situation that, I think everyone should just let blow over. I mean, if WWE wrestlers aren't going to unionize, then there's nothing they can do other than be good little soldiers until their contracts are up and see if the grass is greener on the other side and negotiate a good deal for yourself. If when it comes time to talk about going back to Saudi Arabia again, then at that point, it might be important for enough of the talent to have a united front of saying no, so that you're not just that the one or the you're not the Daniel Bryan or Kevin Owens one or two people saying no.
Right.
Although it doesn't seem like it adversely affects their careers, because it's at this point, the WWE roster is not strong enough to punish top, fairly to big stars who they kind of need.
I do feel like the days of being completely buried for something like that have gone by somewhat. I do think that maybe in the long run it does hurt them some. But, yeah, both of those guys have been positioned quite well within the company the last few years, so there's no reason to get too crazy. And, you know, yeah, maybe refuse something like that. But there's always going to be enough people going over there, and I would imagine that for as much as they put that video package on Raw about having the first women's match there and having the some of the women from the crowd talk about how momentous it was.
I don't like any of that. I don't. That stuff makes me uneasy.
I am taking that with not just a grain of salt, but one of those like large Himalayan pieces of block salt.
That WWE has, as a company, they have laid down with the trash, and whatever happens company wise, whatever happens to Vince McMahon personally because of it negatively, they deserve it. I just hope that the talent isn't caught up in it again.
I guess that's kind of my point, though, is that the talent, they had to have gotten, I would think, Natalya and Lacey Evans on board with this idea.
What were they going to say? I mean, Natalya definitely seems like she is definitely the, you know,
a proverbial bootlicker, I would say.
Brutally, you could say that. You know, or just, you know, a company woman. Yeah. And Lacey Evans is just too new to say to really say anything.
Agreed. Yeah, but I guess my point is that there's always going to be someone, like, as trashy as some of these positions are, there are definitely going to be people that will say yes no matter what, is kind of where my logic was going.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure that if a lot of talent don't go back and refuse to go back, all of all the respect in the world from them, many of them don't. It's like, I understand. It is your job. It is your livelihood. It is money.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm trying to think of where else we could have, because we got completely off the, I'm not sure how we got to that from Seth Rollins. The whole corporate thing, and what he may or may not have done. I think that some of the Twitter kerfuffles have kind of been minimal, honestly. But again, I guess in some ways, some of it has shown his frustration. You know, I'm thinking that Seth would love to be involved in some of the matches, because I guess the one feud, and I know it wasn't quite as recent, was with Will Ospreay there when they were talking about the match qualities. And I'm trying to think. I feel like Seth has mentioned, blurted out a couple other things more recently that have been similarly incendiary. But yeah, I guess I do think that Seth would rather be a guy that is kind of wrestling on NXT, where the wrestling is a little more at the forefront, despite the fact that, I mean, it's kind of weird to say that, given that match quality in the WWE is as high as it's ever been at this point. Is that a fair thing to say?
Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah, I'm sure that Seth would rather be in there with some of these quality guys instead of getting stuck in some weird situations just all around. Like, he's never going to... as much as you can have a good match with Brock Lesnar, I don't think at this point, especially with Brock, that you're going to get a match of the year candidate out of it. You know, I guess I just don't think that there's going to be enough work for that to ever happen with Brock at this point in his career.
No, I think Brock has been in some, well, let's go back to Survivor Series. Match with AJ Styles in 2017, his match with Daniel Bryan in 2018. I think
were they up for match? Were those ones up for match of the year?
That's purely subjective.
I guess I just don't feel like I've heard many people put those matches on their short list for what they'd kind of call the match of the year. I guess I don't think that Brock's terrible in the ring. Like, there's a difference between, you know, thinking they're bad and just not thinking that match of the year is going to be on your brain for them. And, and you're not going to get, I don't think, a match of the year out of Bray Wyatt either.
Oh, you will definitely not. Now that we will both agree on. He has never shown his ability to have that match. Never. It's he's got to, you know, now play this movie monster character that you... We have now established that nothing hurts this guy. It's like the early... It's like in 2019, trying to go back to the earliest days of The Undertaker before he started showing more humanity.
Oh, right.
And it's even worse than that, because everything Seth did to that guy, both at Hell in a Cell and at Crown Jewel, which is Crown Jewel's a very similar match, just Falls Count Anywhere. And yeah, they're gonna have to figure out what to do with Bray Wyatt in this character as champion, what kind of matches he can have. It'll be interesting to see who his opponent in Survivor Series is gonna be. So do you run the Roman Reigns match with him? Do you set Braun Strowman up to fail again in a heavyweight championship match? I don't know who else.
Oh man, yeah, I can't say I've really looked at the crop of characters that could be going against Bray Wyatt's Survivor Series yet at this moment, but. Ooh, man, those ones that you listed are not good options.
Not at this stage. I mean,
I guess Roman Reigns.
Them going with Bray Wyatt versus Roman Reigns at WrestleMania.
Uh huh.
In fact, looking up and down the SmackDown roster, that maybe should be the match then, unless you can beat Braun back up again. But otherwise. Maybe Daniel Bryan can be heated back up as a babyface?
Oh, well, they've certainly started to undergo that.
Yeah, I mean, but as far as just... I mean, if you go with the Rey Mysterio example with Brock, they do need to find someone who can essentially be a filler contender for Bray at Survivor Series. I don't know if you go with the big match at Survivor Series.
Oh,
it already has. That's already gonna have about a million gimmicks thrown at it.
Yeah. There's gonna be a lot going on there. Yeah, I guess it'll be interesting. Just because he wasn't on... It looks like they have a Firefly Funhouse coming up. But he's not... Was he physically on SmackDown this week?
No. He couldn't have been. Which is
funny. Well, I wasn't sure if he was one of the people that got on the plane or not.
Well, the plane... Well, he probably would have been on the plane with the other essential personnel for SmackDown that didn't quite make it in time. So, no, he did not make it to SmackDown. Although, you'd think he could just teleport.
Oh, boy. I mean, I would think with a regular episode of SmackDown coming up this Friday, we will get more of a view of who is going to be going against Bray Wyatt. But I'll tell you what, at least in the immediate future, considering that Daniel Bryan just lost to Adam Cole, I'm not sure that he's the best choice to be having a championship match at Survivor Series.
Yep. Probably not. Right. You are definitely right about that. I mean, we will see what they do. It will also be SmackDown from Manchester, England. Yes, because coming off of that awful trip to and from Saudi Arabia, it's European tour. It's the European tour for a week and a half.
Oh man, the WWE really needs to plan these trips out a little bit better.
Yeah, and I believe they're actually taping both SmackDown and Raw on the same night.
At the same venue?
Yeah, I guess they're not going to do a separate Raw taping on Monday from wherever the hell they're going to be. 5 hours of that.
Oof. Man, those...
WWE TV, both shows.
I mean, I have always been a fan of the overseas shows because they are taped. They are set up differently, and they are easier to get through, especially the Raws. And now that they've really done away with the run over, I don't have to worry about that aspect of things. But, man, by the end of that fifth hour, I'm sorry. Like, that's just going to be brutal.
Yep.
Wow. Anything else to cover? I do have a couple of things, I guess, on the mind. Do you have anything that leaps out at you?
No, not at all.
Well, I guess the only two things that kind of caught my conscience, and one was right before we hopped on here, that I saw that Randy Orton signed a new deal with the WWE. I've got to admit that as alluring as Randy Orton to AEW was, I would have been very shocked if he was the guy that made that move.
No, I would be surprised too. I mean, he played some games on social media and otherwise. So, you know what? More power to him if he got a great deal. I don't think his contract was even supposed to be up until then. Until next summer.
Oh, jeez.
I guess him tagging Cody in one tweet got WWE's lawyers working on a new contract that they just handed him as soon as he got back from Saudi Arabia.
Oh boy, yeah.
The way you do business in 2019.
Yeah, 2019 is a pretty wacky year. I guess the other signing is more in the NXT mold here, and it was the long rumored Scarlett Bordeaux coming to the WWE.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry.
Was that an open mouth drool? Oh yeah,
there's no drooling. What are you talking about? I'm just thinking about this great athlete that WWE has signed. You know what? She's a good signing. She's definitely not. She's paid her dues through ROH, through Impact. I have not seen a lot of her recent work. Her promos or her in ring, that is actually one where you're going to be more you're going to be more aware of her recent work from ROH through Impact.
Well, I made it fairly well known that the women's matches for ROH were not televised. So if she was there in the years preceding her time in Impact, I don't really remember seeing her on TV. And
well, she was always at ringside with Truth Martini and his House of Truth match.
Oh, I thought that was Taylor Hendricks.
I think it was both at one point.
Oh,
because they also had a The girl who got like caught at the border and got sent back to Canada for 5 years and ran to the U.S. Was her name Silesia or whatever?
Oh, Silesia Sparks.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe. But wasn't it Scarlett and Silesia with Truth and Roderick Strong?
No, I'm pretty sure that was just Taylor Hendricks.
Positive that was whatever. She was in ROH.
But I guess my original point was I didn't see her in ring much. If she was just if my memory is wrong, and she was there with Truth Martini, she did not really do any wrestling. And then literally, since I did see her debut in Impact there at that taping, she took on Disco Inferno.
Sorry, I missed that.
yeah. Like, I think she has some skill. I definitely think that it's, you know, it's so easy to dismiss a lot of people, a lot of women. Like, I just think that the four horsewomen of the WWE make things look so easy, wrestling wise, that even someone like Natalia is a good wrestler, but she doesn't make things look as effortless as those four do.
Right.
You know, she might have been born into and blah, 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 but those four really kind of take it to another level. And, I don't think Scarlett's that good of an athlete. And I do kind of have to laugh, too, where, because I saw her post today, because someone on Twitter that a bunch of people liked, and it was I don't understand why people didn't like the term diva. Like, I can be a diva and a good wrestler. And that was one that already I'm like, haven't we kind of gotten rid of this kind of debate already? I mean, if you think that any of the four horsewomen, if you don't think that there's one of the four horsewomen that, at least one of them should be considered attractive to you. I do think that there is kind of a number of body types in all four of those women that there's kind of something to choose from. And then really you have Mandy Rose honestly doing the old diva stuff right now at this point, you know, and she's a very good athlete in her own right. So it's just kind of weird to see that angle being brought up. Like, I guess I know that it's part of her gimmick, but when she's kind of borrowing someone else's gimmick that's on the main roster already, it makes me scratch my head a bit. So, yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I'm not sure. Well, yeah, and I guess to kind of get to that first point was, I'm not sure if she can keep up with some of these women. Like, I don't even know if she's as good as Mandy Rose, who I'm just comparing her to in ring. But I haven't seen enough of her wrestling. Like, her against Disco, and then who was she? I think she was with Fala Ba for a little bit, too, on Impact. So her in-ring body of work was limited, to say the least, even in Impact. Before she quickly asked to get out of her contract. So, you know, because I don't want to say that she couldn't have been there for more than 6 to 8 months of training, or of her contract. Which doesn't kind of give you a whole lot of matches unless you're in a match every week. So, yeah, that one's going to be interesting. I guess the one that I was more excited about was Shotzi Blackheart got signed, too. I was all over her in the Evolve show, and it's good to see her really playing the big times, I guess, now. So, that's I guess that's about it for me. That leaves me with saying that before the hockey game today, we went to the Hofbräu House of Columbus. I had one of their Oktoberfest beers because it was on happy hour special, so why not? I like Oktoberfest beers. Yum, yum. That's my review. There are many a Hofbräu House around the country now. Feel free to go in and get a nice, fine German beer from them. If you happen to be in one of those locales. I'm at Frank11. That's at Chris Calamita. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you happen to listen to us. And have a good night.